when we're talking about the victory. Now, I want you to notice some things as we go through this. The next day, in verse 12 of Mark chapter 11, the next day as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went out to find if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling. There he overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves. And he would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, "For it is written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of robbers." And this is interesting that this takes place right in the middle of the cursing of the fig tree. And then the next part, we see what happens to the fig tree. The fact that his house will be a house of prayer is by a spirit. God seeks those who will worship in spirit and in truth. And we see what happens according to the flesh, the way things degenerate. All right. In the morning, as they went along, they saw the fig tree, this is verse 20, withered from the roots. And Peter remembered, and he said to Jesus, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed has withered." "Have faith in God," Jesus answered. "I tell you the truth, if anyone says to this mountain, 'Go, throw yourself into the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but believes what he says will happen, it will be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe you have received it, and it will be yours. And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive him, so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins." Now notice, prayer, whatever you ask in prayer, have faith. Whatever you ask in prayer will be done for you. Again, this goes back to what? My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations. We see the cursing of the fig tree, those who try to enter in by their own acts, by their own righteousness, by their own effort. It's about faith. It's not about effort. All right? So the fruit that they will never eat again is self-justification. The Jews were the perfect picture of this fig tree, especially the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They wore long robes like leaves, but inside they were corrupt. On the outside they looked pious and holy, but inside they were corrupt. So we see it's the same kind of fig leaves that Adam and Eve tried to use to cover themselves, to hide the fact that there was no fruit, to hide the fact that they were in sin, to cover over themselves with a covering. And this is why our righteousness is as filthy rags. But Jesus comes looking for fruit, and we're reminded of that verse in Matthew 24, when the Son of Man returns, will he find faith upon the earth? See the connection here in this chapter between looking for faith and looking for fruit, because he says, "Has faith in God. I tell you the truth, if anyone says to this mountain, 'Go, throw yourself into the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but believes what he says will happen." Have faith in God. As Jesus came looking for figs, he was also looking for faith. And he's coming to look for faith. Will he find it? So when he says, "May no one eat the fruit from you again," he's speaking of those who justify themselves according to the law. And that's Israel, as pictured as the fig tree. Those who are trying to justify themselves according to law. Those who are trying to justify themselves by their own effort and their own actions. And not a dependence through faith upon God, because his house will be a house of prayer. So, with that understanding of what the fig tree is and what it represents, when we go to Matthew 24, and I want to start so that you know exactly what things we're talking about, I want to start in Matthew 24, verse 15. We made the remark before how in Matthew 24, the first part through verse 14 is a synopsis. As a matter of fact, for this case, we might as well read through the whole thing of Matthew 24. The first part from the first verse to there is a synopsis. Now, we see the questions that they asked him. When Jesus left the temple and was walking away, when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings, "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth, that not one stone here will be left upon another. Every one will be thrown down." And as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world or the end of the age?" These three questions. So he gives them the synopsis first. Jesus answered and says, "Watch out." Now this synopsis is just general information. "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name." All right, one of those we know that's coming in his name is the Antichrist. "Many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you're not alarmed." It's going to be a lot of wars, in other words. But the end is still to come. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Now, the end in this reference is not his second coming. But remember the questions they asked him. What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age, the end of the world? And we've seen that from reference to Matthew 13, that it's at the end of the age or the end of the world that the angels gather everything out of his kingdom that offends, according to that parable of the wheat and the tares. That the weeds are bound and thrown into the fire, the fiery lake. And we see this is what happens at the second resurrection at the great white judgment from Revelation 20. So this end, what will be the sign of the end, what will be, and notice how these things are in order. When will the temple be destroyed? When will we see this happen? What will be the sign of your coming, which is the next part? And what will be the end of the world, the end of the age? Three important questions. All right. So he's telling them that all these things must happen in general. Many coming in his name to deceive many, claiming that they are the Christ, and wars and rumors of wars, but see to it you're not alarmed when you see these things happening. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there'll be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of the birth pangs. All these are but the beginning of the birth pangs. Now, when we're talking about the birth pangs, we're not just talking about the delivery of the sons of God on that last day through the resurrection of the dead, but we're talking about the end of the world, about the world being released, as Paul said, from its bondage to decay, that creation itself was subjected to frustration. Remember that we are the first fruits, that who have a part in the first resurrection. That happens at the beginning of that last day. But it's at the end of the last day that all of creation is dealt with, of which the first fruits are only a picture of how God's going to deal with all of creation. And we're told in Romans 8, and I think we should read that here because it fits right in, Romans 8, that creation was subjected to frustration, but not of its own account. Let me read it exactly. From Romans 8. "I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. The creation waits in eager expectation." Now that's all of it. That's not just the first fruits. "But the creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself," the creation, the sons of God being revealed, why does all of creation groan for the sons of God to be revealed? For when the sons of God are revealed, that is the first fruits, and that is a sign to all of creation, isn't it? Because as is as the first fruits, so is the rest of the harvest. So it's a sign for all of creation. "For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God." So this is what we're... So we know the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. And these are those birth pangs. And so when we see all these things happening, wars and rumors of wars, these, as Jesus said, were only the beginning of the birth pangs. Famines and pestilences in various places, and nation rising against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. So you can see clearly that this is a synopsis of things that are happening, a summary. then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. When you see all these things have started to happen, then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. And that time many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. I don't know what that was all about. Wow. I don't know what that was all about. But anyway. So, now we get to the specifics. Let's finish this synopsis. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. And so we see what that end is in comparison with Matthew 13, Romans chapter 8, what we just read concerning all of creation. Now the specifics. So, when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken through the prophet Daniel, that let the reader understand, lend that those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of his house. We see that now we begin the specifics, starting with the abomination of desolation. And the abomination of desolation is the beginning of those last years. All right? Pray that your flight not take place in the winter of the Sabbath, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. And if those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, don't believe it. Now see, now we're getting the full picture instead of just many will come in my name or claiming I am the Christ. Now we're getting specifics on those details. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I've told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you he's out in the desert, don't go out. If he's into the inner rooms, don't believe. And it tells us that immediately after the distress of those days, verse 29, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, the heavenly bodies will be shaken, and at that time the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. Now that's their second question. First about the temple, and then about what? The sign of the Son of Man. And here we're the sign. They'll see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of the sky with great power and great glory, and he'll send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, that it is near, right at the door. What is near? Jesus is coming. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things. What generation? The generation that sees this abomination of desolation. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Now, we can't think of this as a full generation. Why? Because we're told that these days, the days of that generation, are shortened. Otherwise, no flesh would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, it will be shortened. So I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Now, heaven and earth gets down to the end of things, doesn't it? And he goes on talking about how the day and the hour is unknown about the coming of the Son of Man. And going back to the fig tree, we see as soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know summer is near. In the same way, by looking physically at a fig tree, you can see all these things. You know that it's near right at the door. If when these things start happening, it's compared to the fig tree, because when you see a fig tree start to branch and leaf, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see these things, you know that Jesus' coming is near. But now the spiritual understanding of that, people have tried to say this was about them becoming a nation in 1948. But the fig tree refers to those who were under the law and under the curse of the law. And by establishing the fig tree blooming, not the olive tree, we're talking about Israel physically building themselves a temple and starting the daily sacrifice again. And this lines up with 2 Thessalonians 2, because it's the Antichrist when his appearing. It lines up here with the abomination of desolation. He has to have a temple to take his seat in and cause the abomination of desolation. Now, it describes the nature of that temple by saying it is the fig tree blooming. It describes the nature of its self-justification. And Jesus has already told us, this is why the abomination of desolation must happen. Jesus has already told us when he cursed the fig tree that may no one ever eat of your fruit again, the fruit of self-justification. And so when we see that particular fig tree blooming, Israel trying to justify itself again according to the Mosaic law, then we know that the end is near. Because the person who will enter into that sanctuary will not be the Shekinah glory. It will be the Antichrist, the one who comes in his own name. So we see that it will not bear fruit. It'll be desolate, just like that fig tree. It'll be desolate. It's the abomination that causes desolation, because that's what self-sufficiency is. This is why this guy is the perfect picture of a man trying to justify himself. And as we go through the rest of Matthew 24 and 25, where Jesus, we get to the final question they asked. I ought to add this here. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, verse 31, and all his angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All right, that's true. All the nations will be gathered to him. That happens at the end of that thousand-year day. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he'll separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Now we see to the sheep, he says, enter into the kingdom, prepared to you by my Father. And to the goats, he says, enter you into the lake of fire. And it tells us right here, this is the lake of fire. Into eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels, verse 41. So we see this is that gathering of what offends out of his kingdom, referenced in Matthew 13. This is that separation of the wheat and the tares. So he has answered all three questions in their order. What's going to happen with the temple? You know, he goes straight in with the abomination of desolation, right? But he's talking about the primary fulfillment, not just the one that happened in 70 AD, right? He's talking about the primary, the destruction of that temple, the abomination of desolation. He's talking about the next thing, is talking about his coming, the sign of his coming, as they asked. And then the very last thing he talks about in here before his sermon ends is that last question. The end of the age, the end of the world. And he tells them exactly as it's described in Matthew 13. So I think we have a complete little teaching here that shows the point of what the end times are truly about.